listening to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast. Hi, this is Shane Vanderhart. Welcome back to another episode. Today, it's Good Friday. Happy Friday. Hope you have a great weekend. We have an abbreviated podcast episode for you today. I had a conversation this week with Jonathan Williams, who is the chief economist and vice president of the American Legislative Exchange Council, or ALEC for short. He and I talked about their report called Rich States, Poor States, and how Iowa ranked and what we've done to improve our rankings over last year, as well as what Iowa can do better in the future to rank even higher down the road. Before we get to that conversation, first a word from our sponsor, American Principles Project.
At American Principles Project, we believe that human dignity should be at the heart of public policy. We work in all 50 states and in Washington, D.C. to promote life, religious freedom, local control over education, authentic economic progress for working Americans, and a return to constitutional principles such as federalism. Want to help American Principles Project? Visit our website today, AmericanPrinciplesProject.org. That's AmericanPrinciples, P-L-E-S, Project.org. Sign up for email updates. Help us out. We want to work with you. That's AmericanPrinciplesProject.org.
Okay, well, first of all, welcome to the Caffeinated Thoughts Podcast.
Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about this, the State Economic Competitive Index, what you guys measure, how long you've been doing it.
This is the 12th year now that we've put together the Rich States, Poor States Economic Outlook Rankings in concert with Reagan-era economist Arthur Laffer and President Trump's selection to the Federal Reserve Board, Steve Moore. And we put together this ranking really for ALEC legislators and legislators all across the country to compare their state policies to the other 49 states, and as well as for concerned citizens of just looking to see how their state ranks when it comes to things like taxes and regulation and labor policy, things that we know matter for economic growth and economic development. And these 15 factors that we use in the report have remained consistent over these 12 years of producing the report. So now we have a consistent time series, as we say, to be able to give an apples-to-apples comparison as to where states have either gained or lost in the rankings over these dozen years.
Great. So looking at the this year's report, I see that Iowa's 29th with their economic performance rank, then 25th with their economic outlook rank. What's the difference between the two, and how do you guys come to that? Ranking?
So yeah, that's right. You highlight a good point in that there's two distinct rankings in Rich States, Poor States. The economic performance ranking is really a backward-looking measure to see historically how a state has performed over the last decade when it comes to things like GDP growth at the state level, or job growth, or income growth. You look at migration growth in it as well. And this is an awfully important measure to say how successful has that state's economy been over the last decade. But even more instructive, I think, for policymakers is the economic outlook rank, which is based on the 15 equally weighted factors I mentioned: taxes, regulation, labor policy, things we know matter for economic growth. And perhaps just as importantly is factors that state legislators in Des Moines and state capitals all across the country directly control, because I think it's safe to say there's almost been a proliferation of these indices of different groups measuring and ranking states to get various results. But I think it's many times they miss the boat because they measure things like weather or somehow define quality of life that state legislators would love to be able to go in and file a bill to change in many cases, but obviously Right. They're unable to.
Right. So, yeah, I see, first of all, with 25th being 25th of economic outlook data, that is an increase in ranking. We were 29th. Iowa's 29th last year, as well as, well, we've been 29th from, since 2016 until this year, we're bumped up to 25th. Does that have a lot to do with the tax reform bill that passed last session?
Yeah, so we followed that process quite closely last year. In fact, I was on the ground in Des Moines and working to give our advice and best practices to members of the House and Senate. And we were, I think it's safe to say that Iowa improved pretty dramatically in this last year, moving up those four spots. And, you know, one of the areas you find that has improved over the last year is the category that we have called recently legislated tax changes, which looks at the last two legislative sessions and really looks to see if states are moving in the right or wrong direction when it comes to either lowering the tax burden or raising the tax burden. And Iowa comes in at number 11, with only 10 states in America on an apples-to-apples basis that have cut taxes more than Iowa has. And I think that one other caveat should be added to this, and that is under the legislation passed in last year's legislative session in Des Moines, I think it's important to remember that there were some upfront tax cuts, but then many of those tax cuts as part of the package were really structured in a way that they would happen in future years based on the relative success of the Iowa economy. Yes.
Right. That was kind of, you know, I know some of us that were looking at the tax reform bill, we were happy that they were looking to do that, but we were, you know, they basically were looking at a cumulative 8% revenue trigger. I can't remember the exact year off the top of my head, but, you know, we're thinking, has that ever happened in our history to see that kind of a, you know, revenue growth? So we were hoping that maybe they didn't, you know, they didn't have that too high, because we'd like to, you know, obviously see us, you know, get to the point where we have the full tax cuts. Because right now, currently, you know, looking at your record, or the grades here for Iowa, our top marginal personal income tax rate is 5.37%, which only we're ranked 23rd, which I guess, you know, middle of the road. But I look down and see the top marginal corporate income tax rate, 11.64%. We're like 46. It's like, wow.
Yes, unfortunately, there's still some work to be done there, especially on the business tax side. And obviously, you're somewhat unique in always having historically the federal deductibility of your state taxes, which only a handful of states in America do. So it's a bit of a sticker shock issue that people see that marginal tax rate as being extremely high based on many of the other states have gone. In fact, North Carolina, one of the best examples of tax reform in recent years, got their corporate rate all the way down to 2.5%, for instance. And so you see that sticker shock in a place like Iowa, and many people, unfortunately, don't stick around long enough in terms of, you know, site selectors and economic development people to look under the hood and say, yes, but we have federal deductibility that reduces the effective rate. And unfortunately, that has, I think, been, at least from a symbolic perspective, an inhibitor of businesses looking to come and invest in Iowa, all else being equal.
That's true. And I know, again, when we hit that revenue trigger, along with the tax cuts, it will come the elimination of the federal deductibility in order to bring that rate lower. You know, one thing that the legislature has been talking about this year, and I don't know if they're going to actually do it, is property tax reform. And, you know, our top property tax burden, I see we're ranked 35th, which that's not a place, you know, obviously we want to be. Sales tax burden, again, you know, 30th. So there's a lot of room for growth. I don't know if you've been doing any, if you contacted legislators this year about any of their initiatives, but what are you recommending they, you know, as far as next steps for Iowa's legislators?
Well, I think there's some that would love to see those triggers be taken a look at and have more income tax cuts, perhaps on even lower growth triggers. That's something that I know was discussed even as they were working on the compromise last time. And you've got some great leaders with, I think, you know, that desire to go forward and making those income tax cuts happen. But you mentioned a really big issue, and that is property tax burden. And I believe believe you maybe even talked about this when John Hendrickson and I had that op-ed on property tax reform back a few weeks ago, and we were talking about really the right way and the wrong way to control property taxes. And you know, this is a thorny issue, and I've been doing this a long time, watching it across the 50 states. And local property taxes are really the culprit for almost every state when it comes to their property tax burden. And in my view, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to control property tax burdens unless we have a discussion about local government spending. And having some sort of a real limitation on the growth of government at the local level, I think, is a prerequisite for having a discussion about property tax burdens. But then there's also, in the piece I mentioned, Utah law that I'm very fond of, and it's called the Truth in Taxation law that Utah has had on the books since the 1980s, which basically just adds more transparency to the process of assessments and property tax increases at the local level. Because many times what I run into is this problem of assessment-driven property tax increases, where local officials will say, you know, hey, we just cut your property tax rate. Isn't that great? And you go look at the bill and you realize that the bill is higher than it was last year, and you wonder what happened. And that is, out of control assessments in many cases are driving the property tax burden. And by the way, those are things that add to the tax burden that many times elected officials never have to take a recorded vote on. And I think that's the beauty to Utah's Truth in Taxation law, is they require affirmative votes whenever property taxes go up, either on the rate or on the assessment.
Right. And, you know, that's something that, you know, we saw this year, at least in the county where I live, Polk County. Suddenly it's like amazing, all of our property taxes went, or our property value went up by, gosh, I think I want to say mine was like, personally was like almost 20%. I saw one guy whose property they basically jacked it up, assessed it as, you know, 50% more than the original value. And it's like, you could talk property tax reform until you're blue in the face, or we're going to lower property taxes. We just passed a local option sales tax in Polk County, adding a 1 cent to every dollar. And the officials are saying, oh, we're going to have a, you know, 50% cut in property taxes then. And then we all get in the mail, this thing from Polk County assessors, like, well, that's a shell game. I mean, yeah, we're going to lower property rent tax rates, but then we're just going to increase the value of your home. So,
And now you're stuck with higher sales taxes and higher property assessments. So there you go.
Right. Crazy. We rank pretty high with the State Liability System Survey. What all does that include?
Well, that comes from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, that they put together this survey once every 2 years, looking at the tort climate, judicial impartiality, and overall legal structure of a state. And so that's something that we've used every single edition of Rich States, Poor States, just because it's awfully important that states are not overly litigious, that are chasing away job creators through a bad legal climate. And it's one that flies under the radar a lot. A lot of these other ways of ranking state tax climates alone forget about these regulatory or labor type barriers to entry that cause states to be less competitive. So I think that's one of the nice features of the Rich States, Poor States Index, is it gives a little bit more of a comprehensive view of how friendly a state is for job creators versus just looking at taxes, although taxes are awfully important part of the equation and make up something like half or a little over than half of our variables.
Mm-hmm. So what state this year showed the best improvement compared to last year, do you know?
Yeah, so it was Nevada, and Nevada is an interesting case, and that's a state that has no personal income tax, one of the 9 states across the United States that go without a personal income tax, which is actually one of the things we talk about in this report often, is a big economic development boost, in that many people forget that it's not just millionaires and billionaires that take advantage of this. It is that the vast majority of small business owners file on the individual side of the right. of the income tax code, and
I do.
They're the ones that are creating the new net jobs, right? If you're passed through
right.
via a subchapter S or something like that, you realize how important personal income tax rates are for job creation and growth. And so Nevada's been a competitive state for a long time, but they moved up tremendously. They moved up 9 places this year, up into number 4. So they moved up into the top 5. They're a state that has put some tax increases behind them. As I mentioned, our recently legislated tax change variable looks at the last 2 legislative sessions. So if they've been good lately, they can allow some of their past misdeeds and tax increases to kind of go off the books in our ranking. And therefore, they improved tremendously this last year. And it's a state that overall is very competitive, not just avoiding a personal income tax, but having much more reasonable property taxes and having some other very pro-business features. And of course, Nevada benefits from the fact that they're located next to
California,
a state
yeah.
that has been chasing out businesses and individuals for many years. In fact, California on net is down about 800,000 Americans over the last 10 years, which, by the way, just for history's sake, is very an interesting note. It may be the first time since statehood for California, and that goes back to 1850, that California may lose a U.S. House seat after the census of 2020 because of this big out-migration of Californians relocating to the other 49 states.
Well, that probably explains the big – and I know this is kind of out of your wheelhouse, but the big push to count illegal immigrants in the census too, because that would probably help them. Anyway,
well, right. That's a huge debate over there. You count residents, you count citizens, and right. So that's going to be playing out before our eyes here over the next 12 to 18 months as they get ready for that census of 2020, which will be obviously very important for U.S. House districts. We think the big winners of 2020 are likely to be Texas and Florida, 2 no income tax states, where it looks like Texas is going to gain 3 new U.S. House districts, and Florida will gain 2 U.S. House districts based on the huge population inflows. And those, mm-hmm. a lot of them are driven by net domestic migration versus international immigration as well. So taking
right.
away international immigration for a second, taking away birth rates and death rates for a second, net domestic migration is what we focus on in our report. And Texas in that category is up 1.3 million Americans over the last 10 years. And Florida's up nearly 1 million. So incredible success stories of people voting with their feet towards states with lower taxes.
Right. And, you know, I guess that just proves the point of how important federalism is and how we allow states, you know, kind of do their own thing. That way we have that ability to move, where if we were seeing policies like this, like what California is doing implemented on the national stage, where do you move to after that?
That's exactly right. And states can't build walls around their state lines to keep their citizens in. And, you know,
right.
your example just to your east in Illinois is a great example of that. In fact, a state that just passed a $15 an hour minimum wage, which is going to be a huge job killer downstate, a state that is looking at adopting a massive income tax increase and a progressive income tax from their current flat tax. So I think all else being equal, with Iowa's moving in the right direction, Illinois moving in the wrong direction, I would expect that you'll see potentially some big in-migration of business owners from Illinois.
Great. Well, hey, Jonathan, any other points about the report you feel our listeners should be aware of before I let you go?
Well, one of the really understated elements that the mainstream media has completely neglected to report on, and that is the impact that the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of President Trump and the Republican Congress that he signed into law in late 2017 really set up states like Iowa and others that have been making historic tax reforms, really set them up for success. And this is the first time at the federal level that we remade our tax code since Ronald Reagan in 1986. And we are seeing very similar outcomes because of the linkage of state tax codes to the federal tax code. And what we saw post-Reagan's tax reform in 86 was a wave of state-level tax cuts because of this ongoing unbudgeted surplus dollars that are coming out to state because of not only the strong economic growth, because of the linkage of federal and state tax codes. So we are expecting to report that based on the 2018 state legislative sessions, we're going to see probably a total of nearly 20 states significantly reduced tax burdens. And much of that, and certainly the discussion around Des Moines in many cases, was driven by the phenomenon of federal tax reform and what that means for states. So once again, this is good for federalism. States are able to innovate and use this really once in a generation opportunity that federal tax reform afforded them to now become more competitive back home.
Great. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for coming on. Great having you. We'll look forward to having you on next year with next year's report, and hopefully Iowa will show even more progress. So
that's right. Let's hope you hit those triggers and you can get those rates down further.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
And that concludes today's episode of the Caffeinated Thoughts podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you happen to be listening to this podcast somewhere other than on our website, please make sure to check out caffeinatedthoughts.com. Again, that's caffeinatedthoughts.com. Or just check out Caffeinated Thoughts, Google it, and we'll show up at the top of your search screen. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, sign up for emails. That way you don't miss a single update. Also, you can find us using your favorite podcast app, whether that's Apple Podcasts, whether that's Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, Podbean. Who am I missing? If I'm missing somebody, you know, please drop me a line, shane@caffeinatedthoughts.com, and we'll be sure to make that happen. So again, thank you so much for your time. Take care, everybody. Have a great weekend.